Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Graham, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Graham.
And for those that would care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity
to accept the things I cannot change,
the courage to change the things I can,
and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. Welcome, everybody. Although I'm not sure it's really that warm in this room, so you might want to keep your coat on. I think it's a bit chilly. But we're really glad that you're here. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. And I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We're self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we're discussing step 10. and we're tremendously excited tonight because Ryan and Jim are going to be sharing their experience, strength, and hope with us. Jim has come all the way from outside the area. Where was it that we brought him in? We spared no expense and we brought him all the way in from
the Norfolk Zoo.
Chesapeake. No, it's not the Norfolk Zoo. That was a guy last week. Didn't work out too good. But anyway. So anyway, step 10 tonight, and I'll just kick off with the reading. We're actually only going to read three paragraphs tonight about step 10, and I'll read step 10 before we start reading. We're going to be on page 84. So step 10 says, we continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. And so we'll just kick off on page 84 with the paragraph that begins, this thought brings us to step 10. This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. Ryan?
Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm an alcoholic.
Ryan.
I actually am a big fan of step 10. I use it quite frequently. It's something I use just throughout the day. And I love this stuff about new mistakes. I'm not particularly a fan of those. I kind of feel like I've made enough and I don't want to make any more of them. And I know when I came to AA, like I would have told you that I do not expect to become perfect when I start doing this. However, when I started to make mistakes, it was kind of like a freak out mode. And I really didn't want to tell anybody about it. I got a lot of pride because like all of a sudden I'm supposed to like know what I'm doing and I'm supposed to be a good girl now and I know all this stuff. And so admitting that these things were still occurring in my life was incredibly difficult. You know, I'll tell you, I can't park. I'm a horrible parker. And in the past 4 years, I think I've had like 5 or 6 parking accidents, very minor. And I'll tell you all day long about the all the times that I stopped when I hit these cars and did the right thing. But I don't want to tell you about the one time when I kind of smudged somebody's bumper and said, screw it, I don't want to deal with it, and just drove away. You know what I mean? That's kind of like a little bit of failure. And I don't like talking about those things because it makes me look bad. You know, and I really want to be this person that folks look up to and come to for help. And you can't be making mistakes for that. What's kind of funny is I've discovered as I go along, it's actually my mistakes that make me more useful to other people. And I didn't realize that. I thought telling you how perfectly I did everything was what made me useful to other people, but not so much. Like, you know, when people come up to you and you're like, have you ever had a problem with this? And I'm like, no, everything's perfect. Never had a bad day. They're like, okay, whatever, move on to the next person. But anyhow, so this mistake-making process was very difficult for me, especially in the beginning, because I tend to go straight to crisis mode. You know, I remember running like 5 or 10 minutes late to work one time, and I'm just like freaking out. And you know, the whole thought process is I'm gonna get in trouble at work, they're gonna get mad at me, they're gonna fire me, I'm gonna end up homeless, and I might as well kill myself. You know, my thinking's a little bit twisted because apparently the punishment for like being late to work is death. I remember the day I got sober, there was this guy talking about the program, and what he says is AA is a place where I learned it's okay to make mistakes. And that's very much been true for me. And I'll tell you, it's a lot easier to be human than to be perfect. It's a lot of pressure to put on the self. But this next function of growing and understanding and effectiveness, like I was huge. I was like a big book junkie when I first got to AA. I took that big book everywhere I went with me. And I've learned a lot since I've gotten here. Some people say the longer I stay sober, the dumber I get. That really hasn't happened for me. I think a better way to put it is that the more I know, the more I realize there is to know. But I have the more I practice this. There's two main ways that I like have grown in understanding effectiveness. I've studied a lot of the big book, but really just by living it and doing it and making those mistakes and learning from them. I was talking to my stepdad actually the other day, and I was like, you know, all life seems to be is like making mistakes over and over again and learning from them. And he was like, yeah, you're right. It's awesome. And it's not an overnight matter. I try to make it an overnight matter. Like I really wanted to like sit down and read through this thing once or twice and have everything down. Just did not happen. Try as hard as I might. But as far as this 10-step process, for me, it's really like a five part thing. The first part of it is that I actually have to realize that something's wrong. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've been like walking around all screwed up and I'm like, why am I all screwed up? You know, because if I don't realize that I'm screwed up, I'm not going to do anything about it. The next part of that is to pray, ask God to remove it. Then if I've harmed anyone or I need to make an apology, to do that, or no, talk to somebody first. And then make the apology and turn my thoughts to someone I can help. And that sounds very nice and neat and tidy in the big book. However, in real life, it's not always like that. I remember this, depending on how spun up I am, my 10 steps don't always look spiritual. Sometimes there's even like curse words involved. It's not a pretty sight. but it's just like just recently, I was at work and I got this call from a customer, and he like wants us to perform some service that we do, some generator maintenance. And I very quickly realized that the sales department has not done anything that they need to do to set this up. And so I'm like trying to backtrack. And about 10 minutes after that phone call, I realized that I had completely ceased working, and I am staring at my desk. And all I'm thinking about is all the ways that those folks messed up and how it's going to make us look bad and what they should have done differently, and just on and on and on and on and on. And so once I realize that I'm, like, angry, I start that prayer. You know, God, remove this from me. Dear God, please remove this from me. You know, because I'm not particularly good at handling resentment on my own. I like to kind of like shove them inside and just let them fester. So I start praying. And the next thing I had to do is talk to somebody. I don't have a job where I can just like drop everything and call folks. And for minor stuff, I'll talk to anybody. If it's a big deal, I've got about four or five people in AA that I can talk to and lay the real deal out. That day, I just go over to the gal at work, and I look at her, and I say, you know, you're never going to believe what's happened. And I lay it all out for her, and it was a little disappointing, because I really wanted to, like, hash it out for a good 10 or 15 minutes, but she just looked at me, and she said, yeah, call Matt in parts, give him the serial number, he'll get you everything you need. Kind of took the edge right off that. And the next thing I had to do was to be helpful, focus my thoughts on being helpful. And so instead of sitting there thinking about what everybody else did wrong, you know, I start thinking about, all right, how can we make this situation work and function and smooth? And I'll tell you, some resentments are kind of persistent. This one did not go away instantly. And it didn't help that there was like four or five other things that went wrong that day. So I had to use a lot of prayer. That was a process that I had to do over and over again. You know, I wasn't talking to folks about it every 5 minutes, but it would be like 10 minutes, I'd be okay. And then I'd get mad all over again. So I start praying again, God, remove this from me, and redirecting my thoughts. And I'll tell you, that one took a couple hours. I had to pray and redirect my thoughts over and over and over again. But by about 2 p.m., I was fine. You know, I was happy again. Life was going through. And that's, for me, is the 10th step in action. Fear is another big one for me. A lot of folks are surprised to discover that, like, sitting up here freaks me out a little bit. There's a lot of people in this room, and if I do anything embarrassing, that's a whole lot of witnesses. And I'm always worried about looking good, and especially the first couple of weeks, I was using a lot of 10 steps. You know, I used to get freaked out doing this about a week in advance. Now it's about 15 minutes, and you know, but I use that 10 step again. Once again, God, remove my fear. You know, direct my attention to what you would have me be. You know, I remember talking to Graham. Oh, I'm a little freaked out tonight. You know, I'm nervous about doing this. He probably didn't even realize I was doing a 10 step. You know, and then I'm turning my thoughts to someone I can help, you know. All right, Ryan, well, why don't you sit up at that table instead of saying what's going to make you look good, what you're supposed to say, or what sounds good, why don't you just get up there and tell the truth, you know, and I keep praying, and next thing I know, the meeting's starting, and I'm talking, you know, and I'm not afraid anymore. You know, it's crazy how this stuff works. So that's my 10th step. They're not always pretty, but I definitely do it. I found it invaluable, absolutely invaluable. I wasn't too big on it for a couple years, and I learned an appreciation for it. And this business of love and tolerance of others is our code. I have a code, and it's love and tolerance. Love is a bit of a work in progress, but I've learned a lot about tolerance. And it's actually AA, I think, that taught me that. And I want to tell you, it's because you guys were such great examples of love and tolerance. But it was just more that around, I don't know, a year or two sober, I realized that, like, AA was full of, like, incredibly sick people. And I don't know, I thought it was, like, a great scientific experience. Like, let's take some of the most messed up people on the planet, stick them all in a room together without supervision and see what happens, you know? And there was a time, I tell you, I just wanted to leave AA because I was absolutely sick of it. You know, and it was actually Jim that pointed out one time during a meeting that perhaps people were being tolerant of me, but I didn't see that at the time. I was far more focused on how screw you guys were. But I realized that if I wanted to stay in AA, which I did, that I was going to have to learn to do that. You know, one of the biggest lessons I learned was to stop judging people so much. You know, that's what I would do. You know, those mistakes that I wasn't so good at admitting, I was, like, ignoring them all and just, like, focusing in on your flaws and judging the heck out of folks. And it's really when I realized my own capacity to make mistakes and the way that alcoholism works in my life and being able to see it work in the lives of other people and realizing and recognizing that that's not the real them making mistakes. That's that sickness in them, that a lot of forgiveness and tolerance and maybe even a little room for love has shown up. But it's made life so much better to start practicing that, because it is a challenge. You know, I have a mind that just loves to judge. It's like a little judgment machine, you know, a little calculator up there. Are they good or bad? Are they screwed up or not? You know, it doesn't work too good when you're living spiritual. So that's my spiel.
Thank you there, my friend. That's a hard act to follow, quite frankly. I'm going to start on the back end instead of the front end. You know, I've done this stuff, and I've been here for a number of 24 hours. My name is Jim Willis, and I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Jim.
Member of the principals group of Alcoholics Anonymous. We're out in Chesapeake on Tuesday night. It's a closed topic discussion group, so get that out of the way. One of the things, I was thinking about this, my mind starts to wander too, and that's not always a pretty place to remain for any length of time. My wife has told me that at 44 years on more than one occasion. She says, something up there doesn't click right. She says, you know, something's really wrong with your thinking. and you know, and one day I come in and I've been down to Y and I threw my bag down, and it was one of those days I said something to her and that she looked, she says, where does that stuff come from? I said, what are you talking about? And she says, it's just crazy. I looked at her and I said, well, she says, and as I said before, she says, just something wrong with your thinking. I said, well, what's that say about yours if you're still here 44 years later? Evidently, your street didn't hit all the way to the end of the street either. You know, so, but I don't necessarily go back and make amends about that, because she gives as good as she gets. She's from Brooklyn, and so she, you know, she doesn't take a whole lot, but good person. I said that to say this, is that I remember when I, how I, it says up here to begin, this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal living and continue to set right any new mistakes we go along, and we vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the paths and then entered the world of the Spirit. Well, I thought I had entered the world as a spirit. I'd been sober about, at that time, probably about 3 years. Life was really starting to go well again. I thought I was, you know, staying pretty close as far as step 10. And of course, usually when I did that, it was whenever there was some benefit for me, you know. I mean, I was already quite spiritual in my own mind. And so I only did it for which was a beneficial fact. And I thought, well, if I can get some more of this good stuff that I've already got, I might as well, you know. But there won't be many occasions for me to really use this step. You know? And talk about just really living in your own little world. Maybe that bride has something to think on all that anyway. But I remember I was in the Navy at the time, and I got a set of orders to go out on the West Coast temporary assignment for about 3 months. So I was a chief in the Navy, and in those days you went down to get your pay, and you got all your orders together and everything, and you didn't have to wait in the pay line. Chiefs had headline privilege, you could just go on up, and no matter how long the line was, you'd go on up and they'd pay you and you could move on. And so that day I come in, there must have been 30, 40 men lined up in that line waiting to get paid, and I thought, well. And so I just take my pay record and I walk past all of them all the way up to the front, and as I'm going about halfway up, an E5 hollers out, he says, hey Chief, they don't have head of the line privileges here, you gotta wait like everybody else. Now in that moment, with all of about 3 years sobriety, when I should have kept my mouth shut, I did not. And I let him, first of all, I said, do you understand who you're talking to? And then I went into my tirade. And, you know, and so everybody else was, and the guy just standing there, you know, and I just ran and raved, and I walked on up, and this other chief called me in the office, and he says, man, I hate to tell you, but they just changed the policy a week ago. He said, we can't pay chiefs at headline anymore. So I smoked in those days, and I thought to myself, I think I'll sit here and have a cigarette, you know. And he says, all right, because I already knew this guy was going to be out there, and this long line hadn't dwindled down any. So I took a long cigarette break, hoping that this guy was no longer in the line. So I come out, and I walk down that line, and sure enough, there he is. And I'm thinking to myself, first of all, I'm thinking, I didn't spot any other AA members in here. So maybe I'm good. I mean, I was just, you know, I was just seeing if there was anyone there for support. And but that went on, and then but as I got to that guy, he was snickering, which made me even angrier. And the best thing, it had to be a power greater than me that stepped in that minute. I look, and all these other men are lined up, because I'd made such a horse's hind end of myself. Everyone was waiting to hear what I was going to say this run back through there. And I looked at him, and all I could say is, you were right, and I was wrong. And I went all the way to the end of that line. Now, I thought I heard him snickering. I don't know if he was or not. Love and tolerance was not my code. It was more like going for the jugular vein if I thought I could have got away with it. But I went to the end of that line. And I had no more got to the end of the line, just barely got there and stood in the back. And I was humiliated. I had done it to myself. But right after that, this chief comes back and he says, oh, go ahead, chief, come on back up. We're going to go ahead and take care of you now. And then, you know, I'm thinking, well, you sorry, you know. I think, man, why didn't you do that about 3 minutes ago, you know? So the best I could come out of that is I did. I went up and got paid and then moved on. But the thing about all that was, is in that moment, I hit a moment of truth. And I joke about it, but, you know, and it wasn't anything special about me whatsoever. But by then, I had tapped into this thing about the spirit. I wanted what you folks had. And I had been here, even in those 3 years, things had changed in my life dramatically, and whatever it was going on in my life, I believed what was written here, and I believed what the old-timers were telling me in those days. They said, man, you got to stay current. And that's what step 10 was about, was staying current. Whether anybody else is around or not, you know, you're going to know. And that's what's important, because the other part to that, anytime I don't stay current and I try to let that stuff slide by, I lose a connection with the God of my understanding. That spirit connection, that spiritual connection gets waffled down. I start isolating back. I get secretive again for things that, you know, you don't need to keep a secret about. But in my little mind, it's working. Well, I got to keep close on this, you know. And, you know, you start, some people call it paranoia. I don't think I'm paranoid. But, you know, I do watch a few things. Like an old buddy told me once back home, he says, man, he's when we used to drink at that old tavern called the Hitching Post, he says, How come you didn't back your truck in instead of pulling in? I said, I don't know. He says, man, as bad as the Hitching Post was, you always had to have a getaway quick. He says, because, you know, things get crazy in there real quick. I said, I was probably half drunk when I showed up in there. I said, I never had a plan. Here, you all have given me a plan. And that's what 10's about, too. It's one thing we talk about here a lot about sitting on our laurels. How many times have we heard an individual that went back out? And this illness is no respecter of people. It doesn't care if you're high dollar, low dollar, you're red, white, yellow, black. It doesn't, men, women, rich, poor, it doesn't make any difference. It equally will destroy us whenever we get isolated. And if I don't practice 10 anymore, it's not an option. It's something that I know I need to do if I want to remain here with you. Because if I let this go long enough, I will return at some point. If I don't return to drinking, I'll return back to that position of being restless, irritable, and discontent. And I remember before I ever got sober, having brief periods of a week here, 2 weeks there, whatever, after I'd been arrested or something, I just wouldn't drink. And how miserable that was. So I've made the commitment, one way or the other, I'm going to do what I got to do. Now, that doesn't mean I'm going to leap right in there and do it immediately. And that's the next. It says, we've entered this world, and our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. Well, what this has taught me is I do grow in understanding and effectiveness. If nothing else, my own life is more effective. My spiritual life is more effective. I'm more mentally sort of, I'm still out there, but I'm still, you know, somewhere still in the planet here with everybody else. physically I seem to feel better. I don't have those emotional hangovers that I'll carry on day, and the book writes about that. You know, when we go out, just like when a drunk has come off that terrible drunk and you got that hangover, and anyone that's ever had a hangover knows exactly how that feels. It's just like when you do something that, you know, I see a lot of folks here sort of smile and nodding their head. You know, we understand our own language here. So when Bill wrote this, it was really straightforward, fairly simple. Well, why? We complicate everything. So Bill had at least somewhere in all of his making, no, if we'd even put it as simple, that somebody's going to complicate this deal. They're going to read more into this thing than what's really there. So I have to keep reminding myself that if I'm going to stay on this pathway, the understanding must come quickly for me, because I can get it really distorted very quickly. And I too can begin to look out at a crowd and say, well, that one doesn't look like they got a snowball chance, and you know, or this one over here, well, maybe that one, you know. And I know none of you would do that, you know, absolutely not. But I mean, you know, it's not, I mean, especially David, he would never do that, I'm sure. But when you hear our language, we understand it. And I've said this one before. I was in Rhode Island one time with a bunch of other people I was working with. None of them were alcoholics, and they all knew, and they didn't know I was alcoholic. I don't drink out there, but they just never thought anything about it. They're not drunk, so it's not a big deal if somebody doesn't have a drink. And we happened to be in Rhode Island. Someone asked me. They knew I'd been in the Navy. They said, Jim, have you ever been to Rhode Island before? I said, oh, yeah, I have. And they said, anything memorable about, you know? I said, well, yeah, I was on a ship, and we come in here. And they said, anything memorable? I said, oh, yeah. And they said, well, what was that? I said, well, the first place I ever got hit in the head with a beer bottle, you know? Well, like, you know, we're kind of sick, and people kind of laugh in the room. And not a one of them laughed. Oh, my God. One of the women says, oh, God, were you injured? Whatever could have possessed someone to do something like that? I said, well, I was drunk, and I was running my mouth, probably. I said, that's probably how it worked out, you know? So I wasn't really quick about understanding anything, and I was never real effective in my own mind to do that. But this step has taught me that. And then he go on, it says, this is not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. I'm pretty straightforward when it comes to reading this. My first sponsor used to tell me, he says, man, he's when you read this book, read the black parts, not the white parts. He's for once in your life, follow it, just what's written. Follow directions. He's because you're not smart enough to figure out the white parts, to just follow the black parts and just go straight ahead. Right? And I thought to myself, he's a little guy, and I thought to myself, well, man, I had some they weren't loving thoughts, but you know, but it was another one of those things. He'd nail me right where I was at, you know, and I had to own up to it. But it says, this is where this thing about continuing for a lifetime. Just if all this thing was about was just not drinking and not changing who we are at some deep level, I don't think I would be here. I really don't. And the only way I've been able to gain any sobriety I've got is because of doing this thing on and on and on. And just like what Ryan said, all of a sudden come and find a new, I read this and all of a sudden something new pops out for me that wasn't there before. And it says, continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Those four items right there, I can still very quickly move into self, and it's all about me. What am I going to get out of this deal? And if you think about the irony in our program, what's it tell us we need to do? If you want to stay sober, you got to go and carry your message, you know, to another suffering drunk. The message of, well, that's right up our alley. Again, it's all about self. Well, yeah, I'm going in and help this poor drunk, but I'm really doing it because it's going to keep me from drinking. You know, so it's sort of got that kind of thing where it just works out well for us. You know, and it's a time to tell all, embellish our drinking careers and all of that. Yeah, man, I was, this is bad. I mean, you had 4 years, I had 5. You know, I mean, whatever it was, you know how we drunks are, you can top it. Same when we get sober. We can embellish our sobriety and our spirituality. My sponsor often says, he says, you ever watch men and women alike? He says, you get up behind that podium and you tell your story, and what happens? He says, my Lord, you expect something to come down like the light and the shining. He said, just like we embellished our drinking, we embellish our spirituality. Well, I'm a spiritual giant, you know, in so many terms. But we do the same kind of thing, and so I have to guard against that as well. I don't want to get too full of who I am. And fortunately, this step here allows me to keep my feet on the pathway. Then it says, when these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. I've had to do that on many occasions. and have no doubt there will be many more occasions to have that opportunity to gain some understanding and become more efficient about using this stuff. And then it says, we discuss them with someone immediately. Well, now there's another word there that... See, I always go back to sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, you know? And so immediately gives me an opportunity to spread that thing out. Well, I wonder what they mean by immediately. And then the other one, and make amends quickly. Oh, man. If we have harmed anyone, I said, well, I didn't really harm them. You know, I probably harmed myself more than I harmed them. You know, I mean, I can still, even at this period of sobriety, I can still work the head, you know, about this. But I know between the laughter and the joking, I know because I feel unsettled. I know. I don't even need another human being around me in that moment. I know when I've reached over a pathway, when I've stepped on somebody else's feelings or whatever their thoughts or railroaded something and tried to push my will into something, whether it's in my family, it's with guys I sponsor, it's with me and my sponsor, whatever the deal is. I don't want to harm people. One thing I try to stay away from is and someone told me this a long time ago, this whole idea about being sarcastic, because I would use that many times in my drinking just to cut people, you know. And I read something one time, and they said sarcasm, that word, it actually originates from the Greeks. And what it means is the tearing of flesh. And if you think about sarcasm, it's maybe not tearing it, but it's tearing at somebody's emotional psyche. Of who they are. And I thought, oh God, because I was a mechanic for years before, and you tear a piece of skin, you feel that real quick. And I thought about that. I thought, I don't ever want to inflict that kind of stuff off on someone. Certainly not intentionally. And if I have, I need to write it real quick. And so I do guard against those things. This is, then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. It gets back again what Ryan was saying. Love and tolerance, it sounds good, but it's a practice of these spiritual principles, because that's really what those two things are. When I'm spiritually sound, it really doesn't make any difference how you operate in the world. It really makes no difference what you say, what you do, how you live, how you don't live. It doesn't make any difference. When I'm truly grounded, love and tolerance is the code. And when I'm not, I know that something needs to be cleared. And my sponsor often talk about that, just staying current. Just staying current, you know. And sometimes I may not do it immediately, but I do get it done a lot quicker than what I did in the early years. I do, because I've seen the benefit of it, you know. I've seen it. And the other part is I just hate to eat. I'm from Kansas originally, and eating crow is just hard to do. You know, when you go back, it's just like you feel like you're just gagging. When back there you still kind of thought you were right, you know? Well, you probably deserved it, you know, or whatever it was. But then it's when I got to pull myself and said, no, get on with it. Do what you got to do. If you're going to stay here, the old saying, walk like you talk. And we know what that's like. You know, we do have a responsibility. Everyone who's sitting here sober have a responsibility to carry this on to someone else. All of us. And sometimes all they know is what they see, you know? And I'm afraid that in my case, sometimes what they've seen has not always been pretty. But thank goodness there's a way to go back and clean it up. So that's what I got.
Thank you. Okay, we're just going to continue on page 84. And this is the paragraph that starts right down at the bottom of page 84. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react, so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition.
Yeah, this is kind of like the sweet spot of the big book, if you ask me. A lot of the time we read the ninth step promises, but like this is the real deal. I walked around those last couple years, and that's kind of like all I thought about was drinking. You know, it was a 24/7 type of deal for me. And now I'll tell you, when I got sober like that, I was very fortunate. It went away almost immediately. Like, I don't know where all that craziness in my head went, but as far as I'm concerned, it can stay there. And what's really crazy is I didn't swear off that time. I didn't tell myself I'm not going to drink anymore. You know, I spent, you know, a good two or so years waking up every morning telling myself I wasn't going to drink, promising never to do it again, and meaning it quite frequently, mm-hmm. you know, really, really meaning it. And this time I didn't swear off. What happened instead was that I made a decision that I was going to do AA and do it wholeheartedly, you know, and all of a sudden this miracle, that's the only word I have for it, happened, and the desire to drink was just kind of gone. It was gone. It blew my mind. It was a result that I never expected. You know, I'll tell you, I always say, you know, if this is just me sitting around like desperately like holding on, like don't drink, don't drink, don't drink, don't drink, you know, like just take me out back and shoot me. That sounds like a really horrible way to live. And this thing about recoiling from it, I always have to laugh because I remember, I don't know, maybe the first month or so that I got sober, I was going to I don't know, some drive-thrus, and I had like some old tea sitting in my car. It had been there for about a week. I just hadn't thrown it out, and I went to throw it out to make room for more stuff, and I opened it up, and it had kind of fermented in the bottom. And I like instantly got a whiff of alcohol, and like instinct took over. And next thing I know, that drink is halfway to my mouth, you know. And I'm like, oh, wait, I can't drink this. I don't drink this. And I'm like dumping it out the window, you know. And it was absolutely crazy, recoiled as if from a hot flame, you know. And I am seldom interested in alcohol. I can tell you, I would love to tell you that it's never ever like occurred to me again that maybe a drink is a good idea, but it has every now and again. And I react sanely and normally, you know. An insane reaction would be for me to think about it and actually drink it. You know, a normal reaction is for me to think about drinking it and say, no, I don't think I'm going to do that. You know, if you have an allergy to strawberries and you break out into hives or an anaphylactic shock when you eat strawberries, saying no to strawberries is a sane and normal reaction. You know, and I used to kind of think it was like a crisis because this was that would happen to me. But what I found is like it was actually kind of pointless for me to worry about, number one, because like I'm powerless over alcohol. If I'm going to drink, I'm going to drink. There's really nothing that I can do about it. And it was more like, let me just work on what I can, which is the 12 steps, my relationship with God, you know, because when I do that, that stuff straightens itself out. Because I can tell you with absolute certainty, like every time that thought came back in my head, I was a little not so spiritually fit, just like it says. You know, that's what it is, that discomfort. I always want a relief. I want an out, and that's what alcohol absolutely did for me. But it absolutely amazed me, like mind-blowing, that I'm sober today. Like people like me, they were really not supposed to get sober. You know, if you look at some of the statistics on alcoholism, they're absolutely dismal. It's like incurable and like pretty much untreatable outside of the 12 steps. And man, I mean, I don't even try it. It just doesn't occur to me to drink. I would tell my beet story, but I did it last time. So we're going to move on. Thank you.
Thank you.
I had this thought sitting here, you know, something that Ryan just mentioned. What a, if you think about, for any of us sitting here, when that has been lifted, that desire to pick up a drink, it says up here, we will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort. It just comes. And there's an exclamation point right behind those three words. It just comes. That's what happened for me. That was my experience with that being lifted. And it was, and I don't know, because before then, I had had all the same problems so many of us had had. Every time I was locked up, every time I was troubled with the military, anytime I got in a fight, you name whatever it was, I always promised myself and meant it. I genuinely meant it at the time I made that promise, I'll never drink again. The remorse, the guilt, the shame of whatever had occurred or what I, you know, whatever had happened. And to have something like that lifted, for a desire to have a drink, I still don't know how to fully grasp it, other than it tells me that the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous and those things that we've done up to this point, up to 10, that they work. There are a lot of us sitting in this room tonight that it worked. If it did not, we would not be here. Bottom line, we would not be sitting here on a Monday, especially on a Monday night. I'd be trying to nurse whatever wounds I'd messed up over the last 3 days before Monday night got here, you know? And it wouldn't be pretty these days, an old drunk. I mean, my God, I'm 65 years old. If I was still alive, it would not be a pretty scene. I mean, it was not pretty at 34, so you can imagine at 65, it would make it even worse. But I thought about this, the insanity to pick up a drink, and I'll just say this in passing. It would have been great had my dad found that where he never returned, because I could remember he was someone who needed and tried it for a while, but could never quite get to this point where that had been lifted. A brother, the same way. You know, my sponsor and I often talk about, we both know men and women that were much better people as human beings than either one of us, and had a drinking problem but never could find a way out. So it's not because we were better human beings or moral people, we weren't. But yet there were some, and what causes that? Well, I remember sitting years ago, and I've been sober at that time a couple years, and I remember sitting in the old Roosevelt Gardens group, and at that time they had a lot of old-timers, men and women down there. All of them had 30-plus years. They used to joke that if somebody lit a match around, we'd all go up and smoke. They'd been dry so long. I mean, and that wasn't just the men. That was the women, too. I mean, these folks have been around, and it was kind of a no-nonsense group, but it was, you know, a lot of old-timers, and... But I remember one of them saying this night in the meeting, he says, you know, a young guy was there from one of the ARCs or something at the time, and was talking about he just loved to drink, and he just couldn't get it out of his mind. And I remember this old timer saying, you know, he says, I don't know when that comes. He says, I know it came from me. He says, and it, two things happened. He says, that desire to have that drink or always obsessing about getting another, he says, it was gone. He says, I don't know exactly, I can't tell you the day it left. He says, but it was gone. But he says, the other thing, but he's all of a sudden my world opened up even more. He says, now I was able to do something on a Friday, Saturday, or Sunday night other than drink. That was never an option before that was lifted. And he talked about as his illness progressed, what he also said was, he says, it was never a decision to drink. I just knew I was going to drink. And I would fight it all day long, you know, but I knew that I was going to give in to it and I'd drink that. And he says, then when it was gone, it's like another world. I could finally have other options. I could do other kind of things. He says, but I also know doing those other kind of things, even today, he says, living a spiritual life, helps that so it doesn't sneak back through the door. That just because it's been lifted doesn't mean it can't return if we don't continue to try to practice these principles. And it says, and again, it says, this comes, that is a miracle. We're not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. Some of the stuff I do today, some consulting work, I'm around a lot of people who do drink. But, you know, we go out for dinner of an evening after we've finished up for the day and stuff, and most of them drink. It's no longer that kind of temptation where I'm dreading, saying, oh my God, how am I going to get through this? That knuckle, white knuckling it, you know, to get through something. I take it as an opportunity now. I mean, most of these folks will buy wine to go with different meats or fish, and they'll be talking about it, and I'm sitting there thinking, what in the crap are they talking about? You know, so I sit there and just, they say, well, Jim, what would you choose? I said, I'm not picky, I'll go with the crowd. You know, whatever y'all are doing here. I said, I don't know. You know, so I just play dumb. But I sit there and I watch, but I've never seen them have more than two drinks. And usually the second one's not gone. I said, and that's still, I don't understand it. You know, it don't, but I mean, they'll leave it there. You know, that's the other thing. I mean, I think, how do they do this stuff? You know, this is just, but they do it, you know. But then again, it says, we feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality. And that's kind of where I feel. It's just, it's a neutral zone. And it's not something that I don't know that the opportunity is there if I ever chose to do that. But it's not even that. It's just totally, and feel safe and protected. And I think I appreciate what Ryan said. No matter how long anyone's been here, there are always going to be a time you'll sit there and a thought will come in and say, you know, I wonder what that would taste like. I've heard a lot of men and women who have been sober many years with strong spiritual people. They'll say, you know, I saw something on the TV. I thought, well, I wonder what that would taste like. It's simply a thought. It's not an action. But most of us go to say, yeah, how did that ever work out for you, partner? You know, that's what I tell myself. You know, that worked out well for you, you know, and move on. And then it says, we're neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. But then there's a condition on this thing. Right there on that last sentence, it says, that is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. It keeps coming back to this whole idea about living a spiritual life. And all these steps are leading us, and the principles are leading us to some kind of development of being a spiritual person. And it doesn't mean we all got to do it exactly the same or get in lockstep. It doesn't say that at all. It simply says that I also, if I have love and tolerance, then I need to show the same love and tolerance that you practice the principles and steps so that you don't go back and drink the way you choose to practice them. And suppose I'm going to tell you how you do it. Now, I've been in some of the guys I sponsor saying, well, man, when are you going to practice that? You know, you told me I need to do this. I said, well, you're different. You know, you're special. You know, you need extra attention. I can see you're not getting it yet or whatever. They said, oh, God, here we go again. Right? But there is the truth of that. You know, we hear people all the time talking about this love of their higher power and how they live their lives. And you can tell it's genuine. It's not manufactured. You can tell just by the person carries themselves. It's a genuine kind of response. But the thing about it is, I've always found, even today, if I try to do something exactly the way one of you have done it, I never feel comfortable in my own skin. It just never seems to quite fit. Unless, you know, there's got to be a kind of a twist of who I am, I guess. But it's like my sponsor and I joke about, there's a couple things that I've given him a hard time about, and there's a couple things that, same with me, he's done to me. And one of the things that he every time now, he says, you know, Jimmy, he says, I still think you have a bad read on me not helping clean up the principals group down in Wilson, North Carolina. He says, you make it sound like I never helped clean up. I said, well, you didn't. He said, I was always helping pick up. Steve, you even told me once you didn't do cleanup work. Oh, no, I'm powerful on that. I'm powerful. I used to get there early and set. I said, you would run at the end of the meeting supposedly doing 12-step work. I said, I knew what you was up to. You just didn't want to help take the stuff down. He said, well, he says, that's pretty hard read on you, you know, on me. He said, I think you need to lighten that up. I said, well, and then he'll come back with some of my stuff. We do that today in a joking way, but what that also does, it reminds both of us that neither one of us do this thing exactly the way the other one does it. And does it mean that our lives are any less effective or any less spiritual? No. It simply means we have found a way to have some fun along the way with this thing too. We can have a message to one another without holding the other one hostage. It's about love and tolerance against it. Because he'll say, well, he said, maybe one of these days you'll get to a spiritual plane where you can pick up some of these high principles I've been trying to carry to you. I says, yeah, okay, Steve. I said, that's probably what stunted my growth is some of those high spiritual principles you've given me. I said, you know. But go on this, but you know, the thing about going back to this 10, it's about being able to remain current. You know, I think we have that kind of joy in our lives today. Why? I think for me, it's because I know that if I do this, I'm gonna stay here. I'm gonna be here. And that's what the deal is for me today. Thanks.
Thank you. And now we're going to read tonight's final paragraph, which is on page 85. And it just starts off, it's easy. Page 85. It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle fault. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will. And we've got 6 minutes left.
Alrighty. Yeah, this idea of letting up on the spiritual program of action, I kind of like thought that was impossible for me to do. There was no way that that would ever happen. As a matter of fact, I like to look around at other people who are letting up and like judge them and just kind of be like, look, it's right here in the book. Just follow the instructions. It's super easy. And then I stayed sober for a while. And I realized how incredibly easy it is to let up. It's very easy not to pray in the morning. All you have to do is stay in bed and hit the snooze button. It's very easy not to show up in a meeting and try to help somebody else out. All you have to do is stay on your couch. It's very comfortable there. You know, it's very easy not to tell the truth or to keep secrets. That's my favorite. I hate talking about stuff. You know, walking around like a big fat phony, but it is headed for trouble. I've never let up so much that I drank again, but I get all kinds of other trouble. You know, I start to get some really, really great ideas. like, yes, I need another pair of shoes because the 10 I own aren't good enough. Or, you know, yes, it's a really great idea. Should I call my ex? I'm not sure. Or maybe... Maybe a new house would make my life better, you know, because I could have all these AA people over. It would be wonderful, you know. Or I start, and then my mind just kind of gets a little bit crazier from there, you know. And I start to kind of get like this to-do list of everything that I need to do for the next 20 years. And I need to figure out how to accomplish all of it in the next week by Friday so that I can have my weekend free to enjoy myself, you know. And from there, it just kind of goes downhill. And the only way I kind of know how to explain it is like I lose touch with reality. And I start to like question my sanity for real. And I don't know what's true and what's not true anymore. That's the best I can explain. And there's a guy that told me, he said, once you're either going to get this or you're going to go insane. And I totally understand that because I have felt it before. And I've seen a lot of folks let up in AA. And I've seen a lot of folks get drunk as a result of that. And when I talk to them about what they've done, it's really weird because I have done the exact same thing, you know? And so the question I found myself asking was like, why? You know, why are they getting drunk and I'm not? And the only reason that I can come up with is when things get tough and I discover that I'm off course, I don't say screw it and go get drunk. I run back to AA and figure out what I need to do to stay sober, what I need to make right. You know, all those secrets that I've been letting pile up over the past couple of months, here they come. Oh, those amends that I neglected to make for like a year, oh, maybe we should make them. You know, that kind of stuff. And I go at it wholeheartedly. And this business of God's will, that kind of confused me for a while, especially that next right thing stuff, because I spent a lot of time like, what's the next right thing? What's God's will for me? You know, like, what job does God want me to have? What boyfriend does he want me to have? Maybe he wants me to move to Roanoke, Virginia, because there's some great purpose there. And it would drive me absolutely insane. And I've discovered I don't have the answers for that. I don't know what God's will for me is in the big scheme of thing, but one thing I'm absolutely certain of is that God wants me to be helpful. God wants me to treat people decently. You know, and with those things, I can absolutely never go wrong. You know, even when I make mistakes, you know, I have a way to make that right. And that has kind of been my focus. You know, as many mistakes I've made, and it's really been come clear this past year what an incredibly large amount they are. I've always had a desire to live a spiritual life. I hear people talk about, you know, one day at a time or just for today. And I get that, but at the same time, like, I'm here for life. This is a lifetime commitment. I'm going to be the lady, like, hopefully 60 years old, talking about alcoholism and AA and sponsoring folks. And I really hope that I'm still cussing at that point because I think old people who cuss are awesome. But we'll have to see if that's in God's will or not. So thank you.
Thanks, Ryan.
I'm going to give this real quick. Well, I hope you make 65 so you'll really know what old age is about, other than just 60, okay?
Could you imagine being 60?
Yeah. But I'm going to keep this very brief. I was sitting here just looking at, you know, the name of your group, Simple Actions, and how often I've used this line many times in my life throughout the day. In fact, I was using it, part of it today. It says, how can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. And repeating that throughout the course of the day when I'm in different situations that are getting testy and just in my own mind, thy will, not mine, be done. Thy will be done. Thy will be. And just repeating that over and over many times will prevent me from having to make, you know, some kind of major amend or even a minor amend. And sometimes, even with that statement, I still go on in anyway, you know, and still have to eat crow at the end of it. But it's worked more times than it's not when I've been willing to work it and take those simple actions of thy will, not mine, be done. Thanks.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks very much to both of you for coming out and sharing with us tonight on Step 10. So it's now time to pass the seventh tradition baskets, which are right here on the table. David's going to lend us a hand by starting to pass them out. Thanks, David. The seventh tradition states, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It's both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the GSO remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. At this point, are there any AA-related announcements? Yes.
I'm Michelle, and I'm powerless over alcohol.
Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Michelle.
Sunday nights at 5:30 off of Bayview Boulevard in Chesapeake Boulevard in Norfolk, there is a new meeting that we started October the 1st, and it is studying the Living Sober book. So for those of you who need an alternative to the depot, it has turned out to be a 25, 30, sometimes 38 folks in the evening. And it is at the Bayview United Christ Church, and that's on Wayland and Bayview Boulevard. So we'd love to see you come out.
Thanks, Michelle. Any other announcements? Yes.
Hi, my name is Vicki.
Hey, Vicki.
Just for anyone that's interested, the Churchman Group normally celebrates their anniversaries on the last Wednesday. Since it is Christmas, we will be celebrating their anniversaries on the 18th. Please let me know.
Thanks, Vicki. Yes.
I'm Kathy, an alcoholic.
Kathy! Thank you. That's out there in Virginia Beach in the Kempsville area, and it's open right through Christmas. So you don't have to be alone. You can be with some alcoholics. Any others? Judy. And that's this Thursday. Okay. Any other announcements? John. Yes, we are.
Monday, January the 13th. It is a potluck, so bring a dish if you wish, but if not, please bring yourselves. The meeting starts at 6, the meeting starts at 7.
You'll be there.
Jerry speaking. From West Coast State is coming in, so all of us can fly as well as everyone spread the word.
Thanks, John. Yeah, there's green flyers over there, and we printed too many of them. We printed 1,000. So please take some and do something with them. It was David's idea. I said, we only need 100, and he's like, no, 1,000.
I want 10,000 flyers, man.
Anyway, okay. So any other announcements? OK, Okay, good. Simple Actions, sorry. The Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise a hand. Newcomers, is there anybody here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We'd like to welcome you. Anybody? Okay. Literature is available. It's over there on that table. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting if you want to buy a book. The rest of the stuff you can just take if you want it, especially those flyers. Sponsorship questions. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Getting a sponsor is very important. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. Thank you. And finally, in closing, thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, everybody is invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. All are welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at this exclusive Latin eatery on 22nd Street and Colonial. Please come along. It's so good. I'm a guy that just, like Jim said, I just isolate all the time. I'm just going to go home. Going to go home and think about how I feel. And just taking that step and saying, okay, I'll come out with these goofballs. I'm telling you, it really is. It's great just to hang out with some people. It's sober. And just see people sober, having fun and enjoying each other's company. Or not, depending on who you sit next to. Anyway. Thank you. Anyway, I'm getting out of line, so I need to rein it in. And someone's volunteered to read the last two paragraphs on page 164. Who's going to do that for us tonight? Evan's got his book out. Thank you.
Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the happy road of destiny, or the road of happy destiny, if it works either way. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you.
Thanks. And for those that care to join us, we're going to form a circle and say the Lord's Prayer. Thank you.
Thank you so much. That's
great. Good job, Ryan. Okay, ready? Our Father,
our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Thine is the kingdom, power and glory, forever and ever.
Amen. Thank you.